Okay, thank you. Good afternoon, welcome. Today is Tuesday, May 21st, 2024. This is the City of South Jordan City Council Study Meeting. We welcome all of you here, everyone here in person, and anyone watching online or anyone who will come later, we welcome you. My name is Dawn Ramsey. I have the privilege of serving as mayor of the City of South Jordan with our outstanding City Council and administrative staff. Thank you to all of you who are here with us today. Welcome, members of the public and presenters. We've got a lot going on tonight, so we appreciate all of you being here. We're going to open this meeting tonight with an invocation by Councilmember Patrick Harris.
Our dear Heavenly Father, we're thankful that we have the opportunity to gather together. We're thankful for our city staff and all the efforts they've done to put this meeting together. Please bless us that we'll be able to receive inspiration so that we can make the best decisions possible on behalf of the city. We're thankful for all the efforts from the staff to prepare for our Sojo Summerfest. And please bless that we'll continue to make the preparations necessary to be able to make that a success. And we're thankful for all that we have. And we say this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Thank you. Okay. Coordination. Does anybody have anything you'd like to bring up?
Are there any Sojo Summerfest things we need to be aware of besides show up for the parade?
There are. And first, before that, we have the Memorial Day program. We'll mention this in the next meeting as well. But we have the Memorial Day program. I think it's later this year, like 11:30?
Oh, good.
It's at 11:30.
Is that right?
I checked it earlier today.
Impressive. Yeah.
Way to go, Mayor.
And then the lunch or something's right afterwards. I think it goes 11:31 or something like that.
I've never had a lunch with it, so I don't know.
That's what the thing said.
You giving us hot dogs, Ryan?
Who's doing that?
I apologize. I do not know. I will find that information out.
I'm not familiar with the lunch, but the program is at 11:30 at the cemetery.
And how long does it go?
It's usually about an hour.
Yeah.
Usually close to about an hour.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I have a wedding to go to and have to leave by 1 o'clock.
Yeah. Oh, a wedding on Memorial Day. That's awesome. Okay.
Down in Cedar City.
Oh, okay.
It just gets better and better.
Right. If you're able to come at all, great. If you're not, we understand. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll get the rest of those details, and we'll mention it in our next meeting as well. Make sure.
I know Director Payne is planning to give you guys some details about the Summerfest stuff during the City Manager update later this evening.
Yeah, and also I want to see if we could have Melanie put every event on our calendar, because right now
I talked to her about it. She's planning
preview. None of those things are on our calendar. So if we could get all those different events on there, and details about when we need to be there to judge chalk art and those kind of things would be helpful. Thank you. Okay. Anything else to coordinate?
I think so.
Okay.
Mayor, I pulled it up. It is at 11:30 to 1. I swear I saw lunch there earlier, but I may have just been hungry when I read it. On the calendar, it's at the cemetery. Bring your own lunch.
What it means is somebody else invited you to lunch somewhere. You were just, yeah.
I feel a lot better because I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
I'm like, hey, bring on lunch? I've never seen that. That's great. Yeah. Okay, lunch is not a thing. Great. Right.
Man, way to make me sweat over here.
Yeah. Okay. Let's give a rundown. We've got a lot on our regular meeting agenda tonight. Let's give a little rundown. We have four items listed under the consent action items. One of them I'm going to ask for a motion to pull off and move down to the public hearing section. So there would be three items under the consent agenda. But let's run through those if we can really quick. Welcome, Mr. Shelton. Nice
to
see you. Let's run through those so that if any questions, anything that we need to discuss, we can discuss and see if we can do those three as a consent agenda item, because we will have gone through them thoroughly in here. So the first one, Resolution R 2024-23. I have to go to the next agenda to read what it is. It's the adopting South Jordan Historic Preservation Committee bylaws to replace the existing bylaws. And you'll recall we discussed this a while ago, updating the bylaws and the historic committee, what that looks like, what the roles are. I can turn it to Dustin, see what you'd like to add to that.
Yeah, so this, if you remember, we talked about this many months ago as we were looking at boards, committees, and commissions. And one of the things that we had looked at is wanting to have a committee that was really focused on helping us to comply with what's in our ordinance for historic sites, preservation, the historic landmark registrations, as well as providing consulting information to you as we look at sites that may be eligible for that, or that as planning works with sites may have different planning concerns. And so this rewrite gives us the ability to kind of recommission and reformat that committee to have all the right players, as well as the right levels of professionalism, professional backgrounds, to really bring that level of service back to the community. So these bylaws reflect those changes. If it's adopted tonight, we'll move forward with getting the members appointed to that body so that they can start to work on some of those projects that we have.
So we're moving it in the agenda?
Not this one. No, these are all part of the consent agenda items, which means if we get through everything tonight and nobody has any other questions or anything, and we're able to vote on the three of them together under a consent agenda item, then we will.
In an effort to save a little bit of time tonight, we
It's G2 that we would move.
Oh.
So we'll talk about it in a second. Okay. Yeah.
So if there's any questions about that, this would be a good time to discuss it. So let's move on the consent agenda.
Anybody have any other questions?
Yeah, just a question. So is this a combination of city employees plus, plus we already identified non-city employees?
We have not. We have talked about some because they bring certain qualifications. They're either familiar with you know, archaeology or the process of getting some of the grants that might be available to work on this. Those kinds of people that we don't have in-house expertise for, we would look to fill that with that, as well as people that are intimately familiar with some of the historic events of the city, some of the longtime residents that may hold keys to helping us remember some of those things and identify some of those things that would be very useful in helping us understand the history of properties or homes or things. We'd
love
to have some of that,
like that in the city.
That people.
They know everything, right?
Yeah.
They remember everything.
So we're really looking to kind of put together that team of all stars that, that has all those levels of expertise.
Good, okay.
And these new bylaws just say that. That's what it says.
Yep.
This is how
it
would
work.
And I think
it
means they would meet twice a year.
At least. That's how I read it. They could meet more, right?
If needed, if there were some projects that come up where they needed to, absolutely. Like any of the boards or committees, they could either form an ad hoc or they could meet more regularly if needed. But at a minimum, they have to meet twice a year.
So currently, we do not have this committee.
We have one, but it hasn't been active lately. We haven't had the membership
there. So this is a start over.
Basically, it's a start over.
Okay. So there's no person currently sitting on this committee. We're going to start from ground zero.
We will. Okay. Appoint or reappoint as necessary to fill out that roster.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
And what's the goal on the numbers, like residents versus staff members?
It's more about getting the expertise. So if we have the in-house expertise, it might have, you know, four or five staff members, two or three from the outside, or it might be vice versa. It might be four or five from the outside and two or three internal staff members. It's going to depend on really what we need to accomplish those goals.
Yeah. And Tamara, if I jump in, like what the Historical Preservation Committee, this was before we had the museum curator. They were kind of the ones that kind of ran the museum. And then they've been the ones that kind of do like the Veterans Day and the Memorial Day.
That's
a lot of Luann. I mean, a lot of it is Luann.
Okay.
Yeah.
Luann
and
Luann.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this in that group.
This really builds on a lot of the work that Luann and Jean and those other folks did to really get us to the point where we could now really even engage deeper.
Right.
It's really kind of standing on their shoulders and the work that they've done for the last, almost 20 years to get us where we are now. So, like I said, some of them are our resident experts, and I would hope that one or two of them would continue to lend that expertise to this group.
Okay.
Any other questions about this? Okay. As we stated, number two, resolution R-2024-27, we would, at the start of the next meeting, ask for a motion to move that down to the public hearing items right above H1. It's adopting an updated business license cost of services fee study and fee. We're gonna talk about that in this meeting with Fred Philpott and really go through that. And we've got Amber here. We appreciate you being here. Brian's at a conference. He's on his way back from a conference. But what we talked about is moving it Mr. Luce, do you want to speak to that?
Yeah, we're going to move it right before item H1 in the public hearing section, because as it deals with the fee, which would change our fee schedule, we originally thought it was in the fee schedule with the budget, and so it could be a separate item without its own public hearing. But because of the timing, we didn't put the adoption of this particular business license fee in the fee schedule, so it needs a public hearing. And so we just, with the moving of meetings like we did last time, we just recognized that today, and so that's why we're moving it there, because we didn't adopt the other one first. So
we'll give it a, put it on the public hearings and have a public hearing on it. And again, Fred, hi, welcome, Fred.
Hi,
Fred.
Sorry,
Scott. No, you're good. You're good. We appreciate you being here, and we'll look forward to hearing from you in a little bit. Yeah, thanks. Because that's an agenda item in this meeting. Okay, and the third one, Resolution R2024-30, authorizing the mayor to sign an agreement for the sale and purchase of real property for a parcel needed to complete the Granville Avenue between the city of South Jordan and the UTA. It's that little tiny sliver of land that we've been talking about with UTA on that Granville project for a long time. Three years. I mean, this is a good point to be at, a really good point. Do you have anything you want to add to that, Mr. Tain?
Just that we got corridor preservation funds to help purchase it as well, so.
Yeah.
It's been a long process.
And state legislature funds.
And state legislature funds, and it's scheduled for UTA board meeting in June.
Yeah, so we need to approve it before UTA can approve it, but a lot of work and heavy lifting has been done to come up with the funds to purchase this little sliver of land so we can get this Granville project finished.
I love that.
Yeah. So any other questions about that?
I have a question. I couldn't tell from the illustration in the packet if we get all the way to Old Bingham.
Yeah, it will get all the way to Old Bingham. The existing roadway that's currently there is in a different transaction than this purchase. All the way to Old Bingham will be a public right of way.
And where's the border with West Jordan?
Good question. Right at the south end of this piece of property actually is in West Jordan. So once
this one that we're buying today.
Yes. It's actually in West Jordan.
We're contemplating today.
And it's in West Jordan. The West Jordan boundary is right there on this property, on the property line going north.
Okay.
Once we get it completed and through, we will be transferring it to West Jordan.
That's already been packed.
Yeah, we'll transfer it to West Jordan upon the purchase of it. Because the money was all coming to the city, we needed to have the receipt here. Sunil didn't feel good otherwise, and so.
So the purchase isn't coming from South Jordan funds?
No, we have legislative
appropriations.
I'm like, why are we paying and getting it back to West Jordan?
And West Jordan's been our partner in this. It's just priorities for
because South Jordan's doing the work on this project.
We're doing
the
heavy lifting
West
to get it done.
We did all the work because it wasn't West Jordan.
We're not using South Jordan funds and then giving it back to West Jordan.
Yeah, there's corridor preservation funds and legislative appropriations.
Which South Jordan had to do the lifting to get.
Go team Socho. Okay.
And then we'll buy this, then we'll turn it back over to West Jordan. But South Jordan's doing the work on this project because we need to get the project finished. And it's not been a high priority for West Jordan. So they said, you can do it. So we haven't.
Knock yourselves out.
Yeah.
And
they've been supportive.
Even though it has the job with Old Bingham,
it
essentially connects more or less 56 West along the west side of the valley.
Yeah, it's kind of the 5600 West corridor. There is a jog in West Jordan to come up Old Bingham, but this will take 5600 West from 118 South all the way.
So it's another north-south corridor that can be used valley-wide, but this portion of it has to get done in South Jordan's doing.
That's why it works so well for legislative corridor preservation.
It was one of the highest scored corridor preservation projects in all the time of corridor preservation.
Good. Okay, thank you.
And just want to be clear, they've been a good partner, West Jordan has, And
very
they
good.
Just had other priorities, and so
yeah, they had
together.
Other things that in their city they were working on. This was a really key one for us to get Granville done, so they said, yeah, you can come.
Just to give you an idea, we worked with UTA, Rocky Mountain Power, West Jordan City, the Water Conservation District. Who have I forgotten?
What's that?
All the partners to make this work. South Jordan City, West Jordan City, UTA, Rocky Mountain Power, Water Conservation District.
Larry Miller Group.
Larry H. Miller Group. And they've all have their own perspective. Oh, yeah. That's what, can't forget about the county.
Yeah.
It's been one of the most difficult projects.
Station area plans came into effect.
Yeah. 3 years this has been in the works. So it is monumental to reach this point where it the vote comes between before us and also to UTA to go through with this.
So we'd ask for your support.
Yeah.
Yeah, we started.
Otherwise, this one might have a heart attack.
With Zoom meetings on COVID, during COVID.
Yeah.
Okay,
I still have a question. After reading all the legalese, what is our risk factor? I mean, because it all through it is if this and that, and do we really feel like we're taking on a huge liability possibility?
No, I don't. So compared to the last one we did with the TTIF money for the station, it's very similar to that. Because of the way all the funding and everything's coming through, the real risk on this, and Brad administers the contract and stuff, I think is very low.
Okay.
We're having, isn't the Larry H. Miller Group with their crews building it for us, essentially?
Yeah,
they're extending
it. We already have a reimbursement agreement from Larry Miller.
So we have that worked out and stuff. I think this would be on the low end of liability from the standpoint of getting everything done. There is a lot of legalese, and every time you do one of these, everybody else, the last person in line takes all the risk because we've all transferred it and shuttled it down. And we're the last person. I still don't think this is
kind
a
of
big
last
risk.
Person.
Would you put it
high?
Jordan's
really
level?
The last person.
Very
well.
That was just my one.
It's a great question.
Yeah.
We'll transfer the road to you.
Any other questions?
Yep.
Good. Okay. Thank you. No other questions on that. We will jump forward to 2024-34. Authorize the mayor and the city of South Jordan to sign a franchise agreement with Summit IG Utah. Want to speak to that, Don or Dustin?
It's probably better to speak to this.
We have a dozen or so of these franchise agreements for broadband services around the city, and they reached out a couple months ago and asked how to service. We have a meeting with them on June the 4th to talk a little bit more about the details of it, but it's, so it's just a regular franchise agreement.
Just, what is dark fiber?
Dark web.
Well, that's what I wondered.
Instant access to the dark web.
It means that it's not lit and ready to energize. So they'll put it in. They'll put it in, but there might not be customers. They might not have customers upon install.
So the line's essentially not active. It's just being laid, and then once they get customers, they'll
activate
the line.
But on their site, they're advertising that they have dark fiber.
Oh.
And so that was my question.
That's my understanding of what dark fiber is. We'll ask them on the 4th. John's the fiber guy.
Yeah, it's in the ground.
It's in the ground.
It's sitting there. It's
okay.
Just not lit up.
Okay.
They haven't picked a carrier to put it on, and then they'll shoot a red laser down it, and then it'll be active.
Okay, I just
that's how
never heard the phrasing before that way. So.
Dark fiber?
Yeah.
It's very common.
Okay, well.
Yeah.
I'm not in that industry, so.
We have dark fiber between here and all our buildings. We have two that are lit, and then we have four that are not. And the four are dark.
I guess that means it just has additional capacity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Ready for when we need it.
Well, thank you.
Where are they putting it?
The map that they showed us, it's on the West Jordan, South Jordan border area from about 98th South to 90th South. And about 3,200 West, clear out to the eBay and the Commerce Park area.
So I figured they're going to run mainly along the busy roads. I mean,
they'll be putting it in the park strip, like
the
fiber tells out there today doing.
They bore most. Of
they
it.
Bore all their yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you.
Okay, so those are the consent action items that will be considered all at once, unless anybody has any reason that they want to pull something off. All right, our public hearing items on the agenda. Trying to move us along, but there's a lot to go over. So as we said, we're going to hear from Fred Philpott. We're going to talk about the business license cost of services fee study and fee. We're moving that down, item G2, to right above H1 under public hearings. Then H1 is stating the proposed compensation increases for specific city officers. As you'll recall, the legislature made a ruling this year that this has to be done this way. They changed how it has to be done, and that there are certain positions in every community that now have to go through a different process than they had to go through with a public process with all of the salaries posted and a public hearing for them. And some of our staff and our elected officials are part of that. So in order to meet that requirement, we've got that on here. Fixing the compensation of South Jordan elective and statutory officers, that's the 3%?
Yeah, that's for those that aren't included in that first group.
Yeah.
This is the other statutory requirement that we have to have a public hearing to fix their salaries.
Yeah.
This is the same one we have every time we address statutory elective. The other one is a new one imposed this year on certain executive people. And so one, you'll see actual numbers because we fix a salary. The other one, they want us to show the proposed increase, so you'll see percentages. But it's just the difference in the way they worded 10-3-8-18, which is a statute.
And then we have a resolution to adopt our final budget, which is exciting. One thing our city is really good at, and our staff is so good at, is getting the budget process started early. We have a lot of colleagues across the state that are, you know, up to here with budgets right now, hoping they can figure it out. I get a lot of folks that reach out and ask questions, other cities that reach out and ask me questions, whatever, and here we are, ready to adopt our final budget, and it's good. It's good. We're in a good place. So we'll talk about that. We'll have a public hearing about it, and Don sent some great questions. Appreciate that. He always has good questions. Sunil always has good answers. We appreciate that. So that's item H3. We'll then recess council meeting and move to our redevelopment agency meeting for the final budget adoption for the RDA as well. And then we'll jump back to the regular council meeting. We knew tonight was going to be a long one, but doesn't mean we'll be here all night. We'll get through this, and it's going to be okay. We've got amending the future land use map. This is a home on just right outside of City Park, right outside where the kids play football, the back entrance off 22nd West. There's a blue home right there on the corner. Would you like to speak to this, Dustin? Do you want to give him any heads up?
This is a property that the city had recently acquired in hopes that we'll be able to move our fire station to that side of the park at some point in the future. And this will help facilitate getting that to have access straight off of 2200 West, as well as we're hoping through some other work that we're doing to be able to straighten out that road a little bit right there as well as it enters into the park. But what this will do is to rezone that property for that future use, as well as make it so that we can separate the home from that property, and that home can then be sold and put back on the market.
It's on a wonky lot.
It's that triangular.
Yeah, it is.
So you know where the parade
so
enters
that,
that, where that triangular
triangle
piece
lot.
Is?
It's a nice lot for a home. And we'll
Why
keep
did you
the
say we're
wonky part.
Relocate
we can
the fire
park
station.
There. We can
ideally, based on the geospatial analysis of where we locate stations and how they respond, that's a better spot for it. And so we know that at some point when Station 61 needs to be rebuilt, that's a better location to put it on that end of the park than to keep it on Redwood Road.
Interesting. I never heard that before. Mm-hmm.
So are we going to bury the secondary water there?
We'll look at all those options when we get to it. That flop is a long ways into the future. But we had the opportunity, and as we look to the future, when we see those opportunities, we like to take advantage of that so that we can be in a better position. And that probably won't happen when any of us are here, but we'll set that team up for success.
So if I remember, we're keeping the house, but the other part we're...
We're keeping the part that is
the
triangular
part.
Piece.
Uh-huh.
The part with the house we're going to sell.
Okay.
We don't have a need for that, and so we'll return it to the market so that a family can move in there.
And that little triangle piece also, I mean, I think we might be able to use it to add a little additional
parking. In the meantime, we'll be using it for parking.
Events that happen there.
So, because we know that we don't have enough parking, and with the changes happening to the south, this will give us additional parking spots for those patrons that use the park, especially during the football season and those times when there's just not a lot of parking. This will help us bridge that gap for a few years.
So that's what that is. That's what both of those are, H5 and H6. That's what they're about. H7, another rezone consideration. Do we have Stephen speak to this, or do you want to?
Stephen's probably more familiar with this one than I am.
Would you like to speak to it?
Two existing parcels, they've reconfigured one of them to make that parcel buildable. It's a father selling land to his daughter to build a home. They needed to rezone. The rezone conforms with the surrounding property. Received a positive recommendation. There were some issues to work through with some of the neighbors that apparently have been worked through.
Okay. Thank you. We've talked about H8 vacating a segment, just that skinny little segment of Lakeview Avenue, right? Is that the piece we're talking about? At 7050 West to the South Valley Water Reclamation Facility. It's 1,020 feet. It's actually a little more acreage than I realized, but anyway, Stephen, do you want to refresh everybody's minds about this?
Yeah, so that's a future road that had been dedicated to the city. They were reconfiguring those lots, putting a bend in the road. It'll still connect through to the adjacent property. But as they were planning out their lots with the changes happening next door and some of the changes in the market, they decided they needed to reconfigure the residential lots in that area. So that's the purpose for vacating it. Nothing's been built. This is all forward thinking.
Thank you. And then H9, amending portions of section 17.08.010, and the next one, we'll go over that in the next meeting. The accessory dwelling unit floating zone of the municipal code related to the definition of internal accessory dwelling units and single family zones where guest houses may be built. Stephen, would you like to talk more about that?
Yeah, so this is the one that we came to you. I forget the exact study meeting, but it's been a while. It helps us to conform to the goals in our moderate income housing plan to take a look at the expansion of availability of accessory dwelling units. These are on lots that already are allowed by state law to have an internal accessory dwelling unit. It would not give them the ability to have more than one accessory dwelling unit. It would just allow them to build it detached. The detached structure would still have to be on a third acre minimum, and it would also still have to conform to all the requirements of accessory buildings. So for example, if there's openings, windows that are on the second story, it has to be a certain distance from property lines, those types of requirements. So we believe the impact is not changing. And it provides more flexibility, and it is something that we have been having a lot of residents reach out to us. There's some larger lots in zones that generally have smaller lot sizes, and we didn't really see a functional difference in allowing a large lot in one zone to have a detached structure and a large lot in another zone to not have a detached structure that's an ADU. So that's why we're bringing this forward. The changes are simple. The effect is certainly impactful in terms of providing people opportunities to build ADUs on their property. Yes.
And so they have to rent a minimum of 30 days straight to, is it one person? Like, how do the Airbnbs function? Because I know a lot of these properties are being used as Airbnbs.
So state law, when they made changes requiring internal accessory dwelling units in residential zones, they allowed a caveat to say that cities could restrict those to at least 30 days or more so that they wouldn't be short-term rentals. Admittedly, it's difficult in when we get to enforcement to even know if somebody's renting out anything in their house, let alone on a short-term basis. We have a few cases that are going forward where we're prosecuting people who are illegally renting out accessory dwelling units on a short-term basis. But that they have to, when they come get a permit, which again, there's many people doing this without a permit, but all I control is when somebody comes to try to do it legally. When they get a permit, they have to sign an affidavit as the property owner saying that number one, they understand the rules, and number two, that they will live on the property, either in the ADU or in the primary dwelling. And then we stamp it, the plan, so that they understand what those rules are, which include that they have to, if they're going to rent out the ADU, that they do it on a long-term and not a short-term basis. So I don't know that that necessarily helps with your concern, but we do our best up front to let people know what the rules are. We are then, of course, restricted by state law on the back end from using Airbnb websites to understand what people are doing on their property. So it's kind of a hard spot that cities are put in.
So are the Airbnbs allowed?
Are Airbnbs allowed where?
In the city.
Airbnbs are allowed in the short-term rentals, let's be clear, because the Airbnb is sort of the shortcut for a variety of things, but we call them short-term rentals, less than 30 days. They are allowed in the city. If you own a property, we don't get into how long your contract is for that. There are some cities, and I might rely on Ryan, because in the past we've talked about what mechanisms should we be putting in place for short-term rentals, and are there ways to restrict short-term rentals? I certainly get residents reaching out to us that are concerned. Right now we tell them, focus on the external factors that you're seeing in your neighborhood, and there may be other ways that the city can enforce on things like noise, parking, etc. And that's what we have in our city. But if you rent out the entire home as a short-term rental, you can do that, or you can rent it out long-term. When you start to have more than one dwelling unit in a home, which an internal accessory dwelling unit is one of those, then we say you can't rent it out on a short-term basis. It has to be a long-term basis. It is tricky, and certainly I view short-term rentals as a separate issue from accessory dwelling units. It's certainly something that we can talk about again as staff and bring you something if that's what you would like. Obviously, we do have problems with some people wanting to rent out their ADUs on a short-term basis, and that's not allowed.
In my office, we've been working on a short-term rental regulation for a few months now that we'll be bringing to you. The issue really isn't regulating, and we can pass all sorts of regulations. The issue is enforcement because of state law that says we cannot use their advertisement or any of what they advertise or put on a book as evidence that they're doing the behavior. So to prove it, it's almost impossible, and that's what every city, Park City has great short-term rental laws in place. So does St. George, a lot of our more tourist communities have them for a long time, Moab. The hard part isn't passing regulations. Hard part is convicting anybody, because the best evidence, which is required to be submitted, and you have to give the best evidence you can get, is actually prohibited from use. It's called the Representative Not Well John.
The other thing that I just add to what Ryan says is, with keeping that in mind, that we have a hard time finding the best evidence, we also have complainants that don't want their neighbors to know that they're complaining on them. And so it's nearly impossible to get movement on these things when And it's tricky, you know, you want people to be good neighbors and to work things out, and but when they're complaining, it's usually either I want to stay anonymous or I'm only going to help you to a certain point, city, you go deal with this, even though we know that our hands are sort of tied, so.
Yeah, and past renters usually don't like to testify against the people that they rented from because they might rent again. That being said, though, from the ADU perspective, that's easy. You can't ADU, you can't short-term an ADU in South Jordan.
Okay.
So it's only a whole house short-term, which we have some. And for a while, we weren't seeing the problems, and then we started seeing the big buses with, you know, a full softball team moving into the house for 3 days during a tournament. We started seeing that. Not as much as maybe St. George is seeing it, but enough that it is a real concern.
And certainly if there's a giant bus parked on a city road overnight or in a driveway, there are ordinances in place to address that. And I know that's not a satisfying response usually for our residents. It is a more immediate thing that, again, if they really want to be involved in the process, there are ordinances in place to help enforce until, you know, we have the larger discussion about short-term rentals.
I just don't want hopes to get real high that we'll pass something. We'll have this panacea utopia of no short terms.
Well, no, your 30 days is already in there according to the thing. And so I was just kind of surprised because I know
the hard part
the short term is going on.
Oh, yeah. And even when we pass, let's say you cannot rent it for under 30 days on a whole household basis, not just the ADU. Once we know they're doing it, then trying to get the evidence. Because what I can't do is go online, book it, they confirm my booking, and then take that into court. And that's what the court demands is the best evidence. And so you're in this weird legal spot.
We have some really egregious examples that are physical that we can see that they're renting it out, but those are far and few between.
And going back to this ordinance right here that we have H9 in front of us, I'm familiar with at least one person who's hoping to be able, they've got a great big lot, a huge lot. They're hoping to be able to add just an extra little garage in the back with a little apartment above it. And yeah, they don't live in an area where it's allowed, but other lots much smaller than theirs in the city, it is allowed. And so just from a functional standpoint, I think this is a good thing because knowing where they live and what their situation is, just making this so if they still meet all the requirements, which they do, that they would be allowed to do it from a, yeah, I think it's a good thing. So
we have residents that are checking with us on a regular basis.
Regularly.
Have you made a change?
Yes.
Have you made a change? Have you made a change? So.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. All right. So that's the agenda. We have a lot in our next meeting, but thank you for the time that we've taken to go through this. Anybody have any other questions about the regular agenda? All right. Let's move on then. Item E1, we are looking forward to meeting new board members from the Bingham Creek Regional Park that have been proposed by the county. These are folks that have been proposed by the county, and Don's here with us to talk through it. So we welcome you here to our meeting tonight. Appreciate you coming, and I look forward to getting to know you.
I'll let them introduce themselves, but this is Amber Brown and Lars Erickson, and the Park Authority Board. They would be replacing Martin Jensen and Wayne Johnson. Wayne has moved to Paradise. Cache County Paradise.
Let's clarify that a little.
He sends pictures regularly of the sunsets. And he's told us yesterday at our board meeting that he'll be closing on his home here in South Jordan shortly, and sad to leave South Jordan, but really excited to be in Paradise. And then Martin has left employment with Salt Lake County and working for Sandy City now, and so the two of them put their resignations in together, and we went through a recruitment process and interviewed 8 applicants, and Lars and Amber were our top two that we had some really good applicants and feel that they Larson and Amber would be great additions to the Park Authority for, the, like you say, the county's positions there.
Yeah. Well, with also direct ties to South Jordan, right?
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so why don't we take a minute, start with Amber, and then we'll go to Lars, and just take a minute, kind of introduce yourself to the council and tell us a little bit about you and why you wanted to be part of the Park Authority and what that looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Amber Brown. I'm a longtime resident of South Jordan. Daybreak lived there for about 10 years with my husband and my three kids. We're 15, 12, and 10. We've been excited about the park since we heard it announced, and we've been following it, you know, through the early construction. And now that it's been open, it's a wonderful place. And I saw this opportunity, and it seemed like a way that, you know, I could help serve my community and try to use some of my skills and experience to try to make improvements to the park or help the process along with the wonderful board that's already in place. I have a lot of experience in government. I have a political science degree and a law degree, and I worked on Capitol Hill for a few years, and then also worked for a federal agency for a few years in the DC area and also in Salt Lake. And then for the last 4.5 years, I've been with the Utah Department of Agriculture and Food as their Director of Legislative and Government Affairs. And so I manage all of our legislative efforts and help to write bills during the session and advocate for the department's positions. I also manage all of our administrative rulemaking. So we have about 100 rules that I help to write and rewrite over and over again. And
so fun.
Yeah, so fun. I do internal policies as well. So we rewrote all of our policies after an audit in 2020. So I helped with that process and then keeping those up to date through our divisions and help with lots of compliance stuff as well. And so I feel like I have some skills that could help the board. And I love South Jordan and just would love to be involved.
Thank you. Lars.
I see why I went second.
Wow. So I'm an overachiever.
As my voice is like shaking, sorry.
I'm Lars Erickson. I'm a landscape architect by trade. I'm also a certified city planner. I live about a block away from the park. I've been a resident of South Jordan for about 14 years. I'm just looking for a way to serve. I do a lot of park planning and design professionally, but want to see and be involved on the community aspect. And my dog and I take a walk there almost every day, so I have a vested interest.
Awesome.
Okay. Mayor?
Yes.
By way of note, Lars also served on the master plan steering committee as well.
Great. That's great. Anybody have any questions?
They seem overqualified.
These two impressive people.
Isn't it awesome?
You should have our jobs.
I lost.
Yeah.
No,
there's
I do.
Yeah, please.
Start with Amber. Just what makes a good park for you?
So I think a good park is a gathering place for the community. I mean, this is a huge park in size and scope, so it really has the opportunity to be a gathering place for the whole state, really. But I think, you know, a place for people from different backgrounds, children of different ages, adults, you know, can come together and to recreate, to enjoy nature and the beautiful scenery and everything that Utah has to offer. And through, you know, often parks have a variety of different ways to, and different amenities that people can enjoy, and I just love to see that.
Thank you. And then, Lars, just with your background, curious, besides our currently like planned future stages of really focusing on recreational amenities, like what are three additional amenities that you would want to add that are different, that would kind of bring in a different variety of users to the park?
Geez, I don't know. Different than the master plan shows?
Well, or what you think would be important on the master plan to really see pushed forward? Because, I mean, this is multi-generational park, and so kind of what do you really feel needs to be there?
So this is actually the largest park you'll have in the county.
Correct.
And it beats Sugar House by at least 50 or 60 acres. Mm-hmm. I often will say I champion the human experience. And so for me, parks need to be accessible. That's why I live in Daybreak. I live off just north of, or just south of 102nd South. The amenities, it really needs to be a reflection. I mean, parks are public realm. That's what I talk about all the time. They need to be a reflection of the people that live there. I have I'll be straight up and honest. My wife's a pickleballer. She tries to get me out more than I'm willing or able.
You're speaking Tamara's
language. You got my boat right so, there.
I know that's on the docket. Yeah. I know that disc golf is there. They're a big voice. The Rad Canyon. I think the ability to find uses for a park are more than we think. I know sitting here at a board meeting yesterday, you know, they're comparing Liberty Park to this park and what it has. I'm very familiar with Liberty Park. I've done work on Liberty Park, and it's probably one of our oldest parks in the county. And it's heavily reflective of the users that are there. So I'm not trying to sidestep your question. I just don't have anything on mind that it's great for me right now. My kids are a little older. My youngest is 11. We play flag football there, but I don't have anything specific I'd push for.
No, I like actually what you said. The human experience that should reflect the people who are using it. That will be there.
So my question is, I want to have people on the board that are going to be attentive to programming. South Jordan City has made a huge investment into this park. Unlike Liberty, I understand, is more community or county-based. Ours is going to be county and city.
Liberty is actually Salt Lake City.
Oh, is it okay?
Sugar House is county.
Sugar House is the one. Thank you for the correction. So when you say a reflection of the people, what are you going to do when you sit on the board? And you have county people that are looking out for the whole county, and you're sitting on the board, hopefully reflecting local people. How are you going to navigate that? And what is your opinion of how to reflect the people? Which people? Because that's a big question, right? So if you'll answer that, and then if you'll answer that, that'd be great.
No, I get it first.
do you understand my question?
Yeah. So programming's really critical. A lot of what I do is coordinating with those that facilitate programming. It's the lifeblood of any space. You know, this is unique, city, county. I haven't seen this before, to be honest. It's an attribute, or it's a commendable thing that the council and the city wants to be a part and have a vested interest in what the county's doing. I think I'm a reflection of the city by living here. I live a block away. I hear the park. It doesn't bother me. I enjoy hearing people. I think that wholesome recreation activities that can help us to be healthy are really important to me. I think having a voice that is a user and a neighbor to the park is where I really bring to the table. That what I think is reflective of my community is going to be how I would voice my opinion on the board.
Yeah, I kind of agree with what Lars has said. But before I kind of respond, can you help me understand what you mean by programming?
Well, the program is to be determined, right? But we made huge efforts and steps to be a part of this park. Mm-hmm. Rather than sit back and let the county take the lead, we wanted to have a voice in how the park is utilized. And so I want to know that our members on that board are going to recognize that and not let there be an overstep from the county, and that make sure that the city has a say and has a voice and has usership. I don't know what that looks like. I just want to know what you're going to do to defend that position.
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and it's an interesting issue, right, having this city-county relationship. And I think that, I mean, you know, like I said, I can help represent the community as a member of the community and who kind of understands what the needs are being in Daybreak and the amenities that are available there and ones that are kind of falling short or where there are, you know, gaps that could be filled. I think that this park could serve for the people that are living nearby. So to help to advocate for those needs and also to gather information from community members and try to understand what they're looking for. You know, I would do my best to understand and to promote those interests over the broader county interests.
That's what I'm working here.
I have a question. Part of the reason that we worked so hard and made such a significant investment in this to become an equal partner with the county in this park
was because we wanted to ensure, we know this is a long-term project, right? Three phases and phase one finished. There's a lot of time and a lot of investment that's still going to have to take place to build out phase two and phase three. And a big part of the reason that we wanted to create a Park Authority board and, you know, have done so much heavy lifting to try to make that happen with the equal representation from both the county and the city is because we wanted to make sure that all three phases actually were completed. We didn't want to see any other future potential use for what could eventually become some of the only vacant land left in the county. We didn't want to see phase three go away or phase two be, oh, we're only, you know, we can only do a little bit of it because we have to use the rest of the land for anything else. It's really important to us as a city that all three phases are the park that they are supposed to be, that they become that. I wanted to just bring that up and add that point of emphasis and see if you have feelings about that. That's super important to us, and it's the whole catalyst behind why we really wanted 50% ownership. There's a lot of reasons. It's so valuable for us to have ownership, but a park authority, instead of having just the county run this and we observe and it becomes whatever it becomes in the future, we really wanted to make sure it becomes what it was meant to become. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that good planning is a part of that and documenting the process all along the way. And it seems from what I've seen that that's happening already and looking at the master plan and having, you know, processes in place to update that appropriately according to the guidance that you guys have provided and that the authority so that you can make sure that your goals don't change too much over time, right? To always be hearkening back to those original goals and really having that follow through. I think it's important to have consistency in the Park Authority Board. Throughout as much as you can throughout the process. Of course, that has challenges. But yeah, I just think that important thing is probably documenting all of the needs and the desires and having good communication with the city council continually to make sure that you're not losing those values.
We appreciate that. And to be clear, we never questioned would our current county council ever change this to be something else. We didn't question that. What we can't do is tie some future county council and or city council, which is why we felt like, you know what, in the best interest of this project long term to ensure it actually gets to the finish line, let's create something that hasn't existed and do something really unique to try to protect the integrity of the project. Because you're right, there's a lot of turnover. So these are the kind of things that we will continue to share with people as they come into the city and with folks who join the Park Authority Board. And we hope that 15 years from now that whoever's sitting here and whoever's sitting at the county, that the Park Authority Board is helping to steer to make sure that that gets finished. So do you have any thoughts on that?
I want to finish too. You know, a master plan is just a vision, and a vision can change, just like you were saying. And a vision... A master plan takes attention. It takes attention over because it's just an idea. If it's not realized, then a lot of effort goes to waste. So I echo what you're saying.
Thank you. We have a different, completely separate, not even related project in the city that had been a topic of discussion the last couple of years. And documentation from 2007 proved to be critical as lots of folks had turned over. It was the documentation that helped guide the process that people who were current there didn't even realize had happened before, but it was there. Not everybody realized, some didn't realize, but it was that documentation. So I appreciate your emphasis and your willingness to serve, your interest in being part of this. Anyone have any other questions? Go ahead.
I just have some comments about it. Is it okay to make comments too? Just kind of how I feel about things.
Have my questions.
Open space is very important to the residents of South Jordan City. You know, we do surveys that go out there, and that rises to the top every single time, you know. And actually, I think even since COVID, I think it's even gone up, you know, the importance of it, you know, everything from, and it's not necessarily just one type of, you know, thing, you know, it's very broad. You know, people like, you know, like trails. There's some people that, depending on where they're at in life, you know, need sport fields, baseball fields, swimming, whatever. It could be a number of different things. But I think regardless, as most people, regardless of where they're in life, they really appreciate open space, and they want us to get this right. They're sending messages to us and saying, we expect you guys, the city council, the mayor, city staff, to get this, to get the our what we do with our open space, to get it right. One is to keep it, not to make sure it'll to let it go away. There has been some times where, you know, people have come up to the city and said, hey, we could do something amazing on that space of land if you give that to us. And the residents had no patience for that at all. At all. No one is interested in seeing how can we maximize money and make money off this land. They want to keep the green space. And so I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page there, because the residents, they will turn out in droves, you know, when that happens. We've seen
like
that.
Save Mulligans?
Yeah. And so
just like,
yeah,
just like that.
And I think this is a very, very important position, because it's something that we get talked to about a lot. And so there's various needs that are out there. For me, I don't try to pick, you know, individual needs and stuff like this. I know, I mean, like individual sports. I know it's sometimes easy to say, well, this is the sport that I like, or my kids play this sport or are playing this sport. So that's, you know, that's going to be my attention. So what I would say is just, you know, pay attention to the overall needs of everyone in the city, both, you know, of all age groups, just to make sure that we build this thing out. But I just, more or less anything, I just want to let you know how serious our residents have it. And when we do these surveys, it rises to the very, very top. A lot of people are paying attention. So, and I know, we, you know, Don's done a great job and vetting and having you guys go there. So, and if Don says that you're the top two people here, Don's a close friend, and I know he gets things right, and so, you know, I support that. But just our residents are excited about the green space, and they want to see exciting things happen with it. So that's all. It's just the comments. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. We're not even scary. Like, we're just, it's us, right? It's just us. Yeah. Thanks for coming in. We appreciate it. Thanks for your willingness to serve. And how does this work? We will let our recommendation.
We'll bring a resolution to the next meeting.
There'll be a resolution. Similar to how we do
it. So that we formalize it.
We'll be having a conversation.
And then, yeah.
We'll have a conversation. And then we'll let you know how that conversation went.
Yeah.
And then the city's process would be a formal resolution. Right?
Yeah. Just one more question.
Yes.
Tell us what's the composition of the board right now. How many members are there?
There's seven members. Two Merritt, Colby Hill, and Patrick Leary, who are the parks operation managers or parks and recreation director for the city and the county. Then Angela McGuire, myself, Wendy Thomas, and then these two, if they were selected, would be the five.
And then is that a full capacity?
That's a full
quorum. Okay.
Wendy's joining us.
And Wendy's, Wendy's online.
Yeah.
And
Angela is as committed as ever.
Right. No, I trust Angela.
Yeah.
Okay.
More than ever. Yeah. I can't understate ever. All the board members are super committed. I don't think anybody's missed a meeting unless.
And it's a sharp group.
It's a
very sharp
group. Good. Yeah. It needs to be.
Yeah.
And I don't think our council knows, but Don's currently the board chair of the
Correct.
Good.
Regional Park.
Awesome.
That's great.
Yeah.
Angela was the 2 years. We've been going about 3 years now. Angela was the first 2 years.
I do have one other comment. One of you mentioned communication with the council. I would like to know how, moving forward, are we going to get an ongoing communication from this board to the council? Do we have a plan for that? Can we plan on?
In the interlocal agreement, it calls out an annual report, and we have. And I'll get that to you. We recently prepared that, and I'll send that out to you. You kind of know what this last year we did the ribbon cutting. We're almost to a year. June 22nd will be our year from the ribbon cutting.
I'd like to see that not be like written. I'd like to see that be like a verbal
maybe a presentation. Maybe bring the report and
okay,
annually
we'll
come and do.
We'll talk to that on the board and.
I was going to say, now that my wife's not the chair, I fully support the chair providing us a
I'd like at least an annual report of here's what's happening, here's what's on the horizon.
We'll do that. We were kind of,
Thank you.
That's great. Okay.
There's been
Thanks,
a lot happened since January. I mean, since the ribbon cutting, there's been a lot happen in since January, we've been really busy, and so we're excited
to
have
them. I'm
going to
take this opportunity too to put in a plug for the ZAP. ZAP reauthorization is coming up.
Yes, I'm glad
you did. And historically, the residents of Salt Lake County have overwhelmingly voted to support the ZAP tax. That's residents choosing to impose a tax on themselves for the arts and parks and zoo arts and parks. And my assumption is that it passes usually by so much because people can really see and feel and experience the benefit of it. So people have been quite supportive of it. But the ZAP reauthorization is this year.
It's in November.
It's this year. And that's going to be a critical component of being able to continue to build out this park. So I just felt like that needed to be said.
And I'll just, and then on the backside of the ZAP reauthorization, then there'll be a general obligation bond associated. If it were to pass in November, then the following November, there'd be a general obligation bond that would have the projects listed on there.
Yeah.
And they're talking
do
about.
Do we have a representative on that project?
It's coming up. Once it's reauthorized, then there'll be a committee that's put together with elected officials, primarily a few staff professionals that will work towards that general obligation bond.
I think we need representation.
So that's something that we need
team
to look
mayor.
To
so
it,
make this like 37 or 38 or
I think it's 40. But.
We've been talking that this project is high priority. With Bingham Creek Regional Park is a high priority, and we've been talking in the $10 to $15 million type of bond or project cost for this.
I have to at least 15, probably closer to 20, not 10 to 15.
It's trying to get everything else that's.
I know, but just thinking about the construction costs,
right? So we're going to build a pickleball court. No, just kidding.
We'll build one.
So I'm sure this is going to come up in lots of our COM and COG meetings as well as we get further down the road. But if you wouldn't mind just making sure that we are alert to when it's time for that.
So I got a schedule.
Committee to be put together.
Yeah, I got a schedule this week, and I'll email that schedule out. So just you can kind of see it
see
visually how it is.
Have a seat on that. Okay. Awesome. Thank you. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you too.
Appreciate it. Thanks for your willingness. Thanks for coming in.
Yes.
Of course. Good to see you.
Thanks.
Thank you. All right. Business license fee, staff recommendation. We have Fred Philpott here with us. We appreciate you being here. Do you want to come on up and present to us? Is Ember going to come up? Okay, Fred, you're taking it away. Is that it? She's like, nope, I am so not. I'm going to sit right here. Okay. Well, Fred, we're going to let you take it away. We know Brian is on his way back from the ICSC conference,
okay.
You know,
yeah, right.
And so it's all you.
Perfect. So yes, I'll present our recommendations. In our last discussion, we had talked about the maximum fees that we had calculated, and you provided some feedback to look at maybe some modifications to that schedule. Based on comparable communities and some of the other considerations that we were looking at relative to tax contributions. So I'll focus in on that. I'll highlight again the process and our approach, and then focus in on that schedule. There we go. So again, we're following statutory requirements relative to establishing a fee. What I wanted to highlight here is we need to ensure that the fee reflects the cost of providing the service. And that's the primary objective of this study. We need to make sure that we're also complying with limitations relative to fees for home-based businesses. We can't charge for a home-based business unless there's a measurable offsite impact. We can charge for administrative services and disproportionate services, which we've accounted for. Again, our process is focused on two components, a cost evaluation and a process evaluation, and we bring those together to establish the fee. Staff helped with a substantial portion of the process maps and developing those, and then we paired the financial side to that process map. The cost analysis considers the base cost, department overhead, and administrative overhead costs. The administrative functions include functions similar to, or that fall within general administrative, IT, human resource. Yes.
Sorry to interrupt, but
yeah.
Are we not going to have the same presentation in our next meeting?
No.
Yes.
No, we just moved it to a public hearing item.
Well, yeah, we'll open a public hearing for it. Are you wanting this presentation to be given again in that meeting that we weren't?
Well, I was just thinking one or the other, but not both. And, you know, if it's a public hearing, maybe the public ought to be hearing this as well.
That's a good point.
We can certainly do it that way.
I'm sorry, Fred.
I don't mind only doing it once, if that's what you want to do.
You get some chips and salsa.
So I've done it both ways.
Can I just say, you know, I know you guys are really scientific about this, and I trust your efforts and
expertise,
and I think if we hear this presentation in the public hearing, I'm fine with that. Mm-hmm. Instead of hearing it now and then, you know?
And it wasn't listed as a public hearing; it was part of our consent agenda. But
so part of, and I apologize. It's all on me. Part of it was this presentation was originally scheduled 2 weeks ago, so that you would have had this in the work session, discussed it. Then we would have been bringing back that resolution and had it all set up to be as part of the fee schedule, so it wouldn't have required its own public hearing. So I apologize. It was the crunching of the meetings that brought us to this point.
It's on us, really.
Maybe what I could focus on then, rather than going through the full presentation, is just our recommendation relative to the disproportionate fee, just so you have that to think about.
Okay.
Did you intend to stay for any of the 6:30 meeting?
I'll do whatever you
That is the diplomatic answer, yes. Yeah. And it also tells me what I needed to know. What I wondered is that you did not intend to stay for any of the 6:30.
Have a commitment to another city.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
Later this evening.
Yeah,
but so, the good news is it's the very first thing, and if we move really quickly on your agenda tonight,
we had talked about doing that, of me presenting here, address questions, and if it's the first part of the next one, then that facilitates that. But again, I'll do whatever I need to do here. And I can highlight, we did not make any changes to the proposed base fees, the new commercial application or the renewal, other than there were two process maps that had not considered related to the massage businesses, and that was due to a policy change. So I provided that process, Amber provided the process map to me, and I calculated that fee, which is part of the post fee schedule. So it's not in the presentation, but we did make that adjustment. What we did adjust, so I did not change the base new application or renewal fees. You still have the fire inspection fee of $75 for applicable businesses. We did reevaluate the disproportionate schedule. So this is a much more consolidated schedule. We removed any businesses that we did not feel had a representative sample. So business groupings that were one or two businesses within that group, any businesses that looked to be outliers. So we scrubbed the data, and then we also looked at those high taxpayers and made adjustments relative to those fees. So here's the proposed fee schedule. Now, based on those adjustments, we also looked at the comps of surrounding communities, which had a cap of around $3,000 for a disproportionate fee. So we also structured the proposed schedule to reflect that economic environment. So here you can see this would be our proposed disproportionate fees, with big box being that higher category at about $3,000 for a proposed disproportionate fee. And then you can see other fees there. So if there's questions on the disproportionate evaluation, I'd love to.
Sorry, you go first.
Oh, mine's just simple. Tell us the difference between restaurant and restaurant full service.
The full service is an alcoholic.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. And why are they paying less?
Both of them. The two.
That's based on the call volume. So it has to do with the actual call volumes received. So this isn't their base license. They wouldn't pay a different, just an application for renewal or a new business license. But they did show different call volumes for those groups.
So this is reflecting that a restaurant serves the alcohol is getting less call volume?
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting.
So in the past, or currently, our fee schedule, all the different categories of alcohol licenses are the same price. The restaurants that have full service, which means beer, liquor, and wine, and the bar licenses, they get more calls for service. So their disproportionate is higher than the other types of alcohol licenses in our city.
Yeah.
So that's why we've added the
regular restaurant, and then you've got restaurants that have alcohol licenses, then you've got the two that have
the
bar
license. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we have tavern separate, so that the actual there were two businesses classified as tavern that
that's
do have a disproportionate.
Bar. We
that's
call
bar.
Them bar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So those do have a higher disproportionate.
Uh-huh. Oyster
Bar.
Yeah.
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 So.
Yeah.
And the only, most of these are assessed on a per business basis. The only one that's not is the assisted living nursing category, which is a fee per bed. So it does scale based on size.
The question I have is the combined fee there includes the base fee. Is that correct? So that's the total fee? Is that what the combined
No, sorry. That's just the combined disproportionate fee when we looked at police
all
and
of
fire.
The different factors.
Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Two, police and fire.
Okay.
Police and fire. So that's combined public safety disproportionate.
And so then there's also a base fee.
Yes. Yeah. So whether it's a new application, it'll be assessed the new business license relative to the...
What was that, like $130 or something like that? Or?
So, the general license is $263.
$263,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And so
currently
it'd be that plus the disproportionate fee for those businesses, or those types of businesses.
Yes.
Yeah.
I see. Okay.
So,
And if you're answering that question, you can keep finishing it, and I'll just wait to jump in. What it looks like to me that we have here is you put together homogeneous groupings, of like, and we're saying, okay, here's what it looked, the additional fees that are there. And so in order to make this list, there has to be a certain number of these types of establishments for it to be credible, right? I mean, so you have to have a certain number for to say, hey, to even make this list, we have to have certain number of hotels and grocery stores, but some of the ones that one getting at is, so if you have, let's say you have a business that's disproportionately higher, but they're not really homogeneous with others. I mean, do we still potentially have a situation where they're not necessarily, because we just don't have enough data on it, that we're not able to get any additional charges. What I'm wondering is, could in addition to this, could we have I'm just going to throw out an idea, like in all other heterogeneous, we just say, hey, it doesn't fit with a bunch of other ones, but we know that this and a number of other ones, that like in all other, are disproportionately higher. We're going to put them in a group together. They're not homogeneous, they're more heterogeneous, but they're disproportionately higher, and we need to make sure that this grouping together is paying their fair share. I worry a little bit about that. Those types of businesses that we're not. Is there a way to do that?
Well,
are you following what I'm getting
at? Like manufacturing or tech or certain things like that don't fit into one of these categories.
It could be whatever it might be, but we just don't have enough of them. But we know it's higher.
Whatever.
We know, it could be anything. We know it's higher, but could we lump those into a group saying, hey, you guys together as a group here, you're disproportionately higher, so we're gonna charge you, an additional amount as your own grouping. Is that even possible, or
yeah,
is that...
So whenever we do a study like this, we have to try to define what is the definition of the group.
Yeah.
So how do we, for purpose of administration, how do we say these are the parameters that we put all businesses into this box? So trying to evaluate, based on your question, what would be the definition of that group to say, now we can sort all business licenses and pull any businesses that fit within the definition into this box and then evaluate their disproportion. But we can't, once we establish that definition, we can't then treat individuals differently within that group. So
we can't do like a everybody else definition.
So when a business license comes in, it's my job to classify it in the box. I put it in the correct box. And that's the information that Fred had and Matt Jarman had when they pulled all the police and fire data and put them in the correct boxes so you could see which ones had the higher impact.
But we have, you can see like the bar, we only have two businesses in that grouping. So it doesn't necessarily, we didn't, if there were disproportionate impacts and there were only a few businesses, we still looked at evaluating that.
Okay.
But you also compared it to neighboring communities, which would, which is how they're justifying their data.
But there may be, I mean, the challenge with this is once we, when we get this data, we establish, you know, the full laundry list of businesses based on descriptions.
Yeah.
And then some of those we may combine, some of them may, we may try to separate. But the process to date has been, here's the full list. You know, in our previous discussion, we had a much longer list of disproportionate, and there was the feedback of, you know, that that may be too much. So it's balancing that of saying, okay, how do we define the group and make sure we can sort all businesses based on that definition? Once we have that, then we evaluate the disproportionate impacts. My guess is if we take everybody else and say, well, we're just going to throw all other businesses into to a group, we'd have to reevaluate if they truly have a disproportionate impact when you put them all into a group. Because we can't, again, if we say it's all other businesses, we have to take all other businesses and put them in that group, those that have disproportionate and those that don't, and look at the average of all businesses in that group.
Well, and let me just give you just, I'm just gonna point a couple things out here. So, and I appreciate what you're doing. This looks great, but I'm just pointing, I do feel that there's some potential businesses that because they don't make it into a group, but they might be disproportionate, you know, aren't getting categories. But I'm just going to use an example of you know, what some other industries do when they're looking at stuff. That's, they'll assign like hazard grades, you know, to say, hey, I was like, you might not be in a group, but you're assigned a hazard grade. And so based on your hazard grade, we know based on what industry, you are, here's kind of what that looks like. And so it might not be, you know, it might not be the exact, like it's a tavern or restaurant, but you have other industries that are of similar hazard grade, or you know that where you can kind of start grouping that way. Anyways,
we evaluated all businesses, though.
Yeah,
I want to be clear on that. We looked at every business and put them in their primary group.
Said
if they were classified as gymnastics or a hair salon or whatever that base category was, we looked at all of them and determined if there were disproportionate impacts. That led to that first list and then the refinement of this list. But there could be, within any group, you're going to have potential outliers or businesses within that base group that will have higher calls for service. But it's determining what is that metric, that hazard metric, or how do we pull them out and put them in another grouping? So some entities will do geographic location and say all the businesses here, but I did want to clarify, we did evaluate all businesses. So we didn't, there was, you know, businesses that, there were some removal of businesses, but that's due to shared addresses or, you know, where we couldn't attribute calls directly to those businesses. But we didn't leave any out of the evaluation. But we may not have classified
the
them in the way that you're talking about.
These ones stuck out like a sore thumb at the top of the list.
And I get that. I mean, once in your group, it's easy for them to say, hey, these group well, and we do that. And so I'm not saying we need to change anything, but I'm just saying, you know, for ones that don't group well, but you can say, hey, it's not always easy to measure on an individual basis. Yeah. But once you go in there and you group them together, that you think have similar higher hazard grades, you can then go in there and aggregate that to go in there and say, as a group, what does that look like? I'm just telling you, there's ways to do it.
For sure,
I personally do it myself, and so I mean, I know differently from what you're doing in a different fashion, but there are ways to do it. Because otherwise what ends up happening is, you know, really what we're trying to do is we're trying to not have any subsidization is really what we're trying to accomplish, right? And so...
yes, and I'll...
Or as little as possible. And so I think you guys, I give you guys an A+. You've done a great job in getting these categories. Only thing I'm just saying is there's some other categories that probably don't group well that just maybe next time we look at this, just something to think about.
I think there would be a way to... provide a definition of based on calls or a business type too.
Yeah.
That don't fit the standard is what you're saying.
Yeah.
If these are the way we classify them, but there may be some other metric that stands out. Which, yeah, that would be interesting to explore.
Yeah.
And if future studies say, hey, can we reclassify these potentially?
We can chat later. Yes. I'll get some ideas and stuff like that. So yeah, yeah. But just the way you don't get people that are
Kind of geeking out over. Yeah. Here. Sorry. That sounds like a really good idea.
You guys were talking.
Yes.
That's all I have. Yeah.
So yes, this would represent that revised schedule, based on recommendation to refine that and look at our comparable communities, look at high taxpayers, and make adjustments based on outliers and sample size. So going back to that final comment of subsidization, this does not address equity necessarily. It doesn't ensure that your disproportionate fees are at their maximum. This is obviously a reduction now based on these objectives and economies, right? Say, okay, how do we compare while still attributing a disproportionate impact to these high users on the system. So we're trying to balance that out, which is this proposal here.
Okay. I have an operational question. To amend the agenda to make this a public hearing item in our next meeting, I'm looking at this, trying to figure out where is the right place to put that. We can move mayor and council reports to the end of the meeting. We have other...
You could put it... you can put it anywhere on the agenda that you want. If we want to help Mr. Philpott get to his next
meeting... That's my objective.
We could do it right after your minute approval.
Yeah.
We can give him time to make this presentation in the council meeting, open the public hearing, close the public hearing, vote on that resolution, and then proceed with the rest of the meeting.
And then return to public comment or whatever.
Put it after D. After D.
After D.
Because then we just have the welcome, invocation, pledge of allegiance, minute approval, and then take it away.
Okay. And then we could have this presentation on resolution R20, amend the agenda to move from the consent agenda up, and then we would just do that and open the public hearing. And then when it closes, you could get back to the regular schedule.
It doesn't have to be clumped with the other public hearings.
No, it doesn't.
Okay, then I think that's how we should.
We've done that.
Could you stay that long?
Yes,
if we moved
great.
It to the very front?
That would be perfect.
Amber might even stay.
She's like,
uh-huh.
It's not. I'm staying all night. Just kidding.
Okay, if that would work.
Yeah, great. Right. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thanks so much. Okay, thanks, Amber.
Yes.
All right, I'm going to ask for a motion to recess our city council study meeting and move us into executive closed session for the discussion of the character, professional competence, or physical or mental health of an individual, and a discussion of the purchase, exchange, or lease of real property.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? I'm going to ask for a motion to adjourn this study meeting.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you.
Okay, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All right, we are adjourned.